1850 715 815.
Good afternoon and you're very welcome to Liveline. Now, we have a very special show for you today because we wanted to pay tribute to the late, great Brendan Grace. Brendan Grace was, of course, a showbiz legend, but he was also a husband to Eileen, a father to Amanda, Bradley, Brendan Patrick and Melanie, and a grandfather to his three grandsons. And Brendan's daughter, Melanie Gillespie, joins me now. Melanie, all of us here on the Liveline team are so sorry to hear this news this morning. So many of our listeners have been in touch to pass on their best wishes because, of course, so many of us felt like we knew Brendan, but you knew him as your dad.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate you giving us a call, and what you've said couldn't be truer.
What was it like being Brendan Grace's daughter, Melanie?
You know, it's the question that we have been asked so many times over the years, and I've been thinking about this a lot because each of us want to speak something at his eulogy, and actually my sister came up with the idea that it would be lovely to answer this question to the public. And you know, there were times when people would ask that question and I would answer it and say, well, you know, if being Brendan Grace's daughter is as ordinary as being Joe Soap's daughter. And it's really only, you know, in the last couple of weeks that I realised that it was actually, you know, more than ordinary. It was extraordinary, really, being his daughter for so many reasons, too many to mention. But top of the list being that he had the kindest heart. I have to be careful as well because he did ask us to speak about him in the present, even after he passed. So it's a difficult thing to do. And I may not succeed entirely, but I'll do my best. He is the kindest person that you could have ever met. And just a heart that had enough room in it for his family and a nation. And we're just so proud of that.
That's the thing that over the last few hours, as the tributes have been pouring in, Melanie, there's so many stories from people who met him, and not a bad story amongst them. He seemed to have had time for everyone.
He really did. You know, I never ever remember my dad turning his back on a fan, ever. He understood that his fans were what brought him to where he was. He genuinely loved when somebody would come up to him and give, I mean, the amount of jokes that people would come up, many of which he would use, some of them he had to clean up, but he really enjoyed the public. He really was a man of the public, you know. He salted the earth, wanted to be amongst everyone, not above them, just with them.
And that, because it must have been constant intrusion, really, everywhere he went, because he was known by everyone. Did that bother him at all? Was there ever a time where he felt, I just want to be alone now?
You know, it didn't bother him as much as it probably bothered us. There were times when we'd say, can we just get a go of our dad, you know, let us go out on a Sunday. But, you know, because of his graciousness to his fans, he taught us how to be gracious for them also. So I don't really think there was a moment where we felt, you know, frustrated to the point where we'd have to say something, or, you know, we understood that dad, his kindness to other people was something that thankfully we ended up getting from him as well. And we were as grateful for his fans as he was. So we were happy to share him. In the last couple of weeks, we definitely, you know, kept him to ourselves as much as we possibly could, because, you know, my sister even said at one point, we've shared him all our lives, and my mother said it as well, and now it's our time to be with him 100%, you know.
You said there that people came up to him with jokes. Is it like, how did he work on his material? Did he go into a quiet room and write material, or because he just seemed to be so naturally funny?
Yeah, he talked his material a lot of the time. You know, up until, my father was completely lucid up until yesterday afternoon, and he was a huge observer. And he would make observations. And a lot of the time we'd say, oh, Dad, that would be a great piece of material. He constantly had a notepad and a pen in his top pocket. And anything that came to mind, whether there was a beer mat nearby, which there was often, or, you know, a napkin or whatever it might be. And then he'd come home and he'd take all of this paper out of his top pocket. And that's where a lot of his material would come from. He'd just tie it together and, you know, it was all from observations, his comedy, you know, things that are happening to us all on a daily basis. I think his relatability is what made him, you know, a household favourite.
And he had, of course, those fantastic characters that everyone mm-hmm. will remember, from Butler to the father of the bride. Of course, he would have been the father of the bride, the real father of the bride, at your wedding, of course.
Oh, he Melanie. Was. He
How did that
was.
Speech go?
I think it was probably his best performance. Since myself and my sister were small, we knew it was coming at some point in our lives. And he did it justice for the two of us, that's for sure. You know, we just loved watching him perform, and every opportunity he got to perform, whether it was at our own weddings or other people's weddings, you know, he was just that type where he'd step into an environment. And if he felt that he could get up and say something and do something to make a crowd or a person feel better and give them a laugh, it was his greatest gift in life, and it was what gave him his greatest joy in life. And he did it up until his last breath.
Who made him laugh then, Melanie?
That's a great question. Well, I mean, besides, you know, the greats that, you know, he would have grown up on himself, he was a huge fan of Tommy Cooper. He loved, you know, Fawlty Towers, and Norman Wisdom was a favourite, and then more modern comedians like John Candy and Steve Martin. But besides, you know, the famous ones, you know, I mean, I would hope to think that we would give him a giggle. He actually loves when we... when we take him off, when we do impressions of him to him. And we actually did that a lot in the hospital this past week. He'd say, do the face I make when I'm hungry but I'm not getting food quick enough. or, you know, do the thing I do when I'm answering the phone and then I have to call you back. You know, we had all these little inside jokes, and we played them all out for him. We really got to have a very, very special, you know, time with him. It was quite a vulnerable, special time, you know, this past 10 days for me. My mom has been in the hospital with him, with my sister, for the guts of 5 weeks at this stage.
Yeah, because, of course, he was in ill health, but the end came very suddenly then for your family.
It did, yeah. We certainly weren't expecting the diagnosis that he got, and then we weren't expecting the prognosis he got. So it has been several tough blows in a very short period of time, to be told that your dad is has pneumonia.
Take your time there, Melanie.
And then to be told that he has terminal cancer is very difficult. But we dealt with it so well, and we came together as a united family with a strength that I don't think any of us realised that we had. And it was only then that we realised that it was him that was feeding us the strength. I've never seen somebody to face such a horrible prognosis with, you know, his own name that he was born with. He faced it with grace and dignity and bravery, and he set all of us aside and told us that he had lived a beautiful, full life, and that he was looking forward to seeing his loved ones who had passed. And he said to me at one point, if you think I was good in this life, wait till you see what I have in store when I get to the other side. So he certainly gave us many, many gifts in this last couple of weeks, many.
I'm sure you gave him many gifts as well, Melanie. It sounds like it was a very, very beautiful time in a way for your family.
It was. And, you know, he's in the hospital, he amazed us. You know, my dad was always an inspiring person, and he still inspired us the entire time we were in there. One of the little phrases that he kept saying the whole time he was in there, the doctors, when they would come into him, every time they would ask, "How are you today, Brendan?" "I'm great." And then when the doctors would leave and he'd say to us, "Okay, here's what I want today. I want you to go to Dunstores and I want this and I want that. And you're going to come back and we'll have a party." And then we'd have it. We had a party every day in the hospital. And he'd put his hands together and he'd say, "I love this." He kept saying, "I love this." And it was so comforting to us because he didn't have any pain. Every time we'd ask, "Dad, have you any pain at all?" And he'd say, "Not as much as a toothache." He couldn't believe that this was going to take him because he felt so good and he looked so well. But unfortunately, it was a very rare type of cancer and we left no stone unturned. We met with his amazing team over at the Galway Clinic. We also had opinions over in the States and we checked into everything. We researched and researched and had meeting after meeting. But unfortunately, my father's underlying health was a big issue also with his diabetes, and he was suffering with pneumonia as well, which was disguising this rare form of cancer, which is why it wasn't detected until its very, very late stages.
And going back, Melanie, to, you know, life as a child in that house, I'm picturing you all sitting around a breakfast table with Brendan Grace as your dad.
Yeah.
Was it a laugh a minute?
Well, you know, here's the thing. So, you know, Dad's a gifted and a very talented entertainer, and he knows how to put that switch on. And you have to be able to do that in this business, because I've seen my dad's heart being broken with the loss of his mother, with the loss of friends, and he's had to go on and do a gig that night. And I watched him from the stage and I said, or from the audience, and thought to myself, how is he doing this? How is he making these people laugh when he was just side stage in the wings crying? But that was his gift. That is his gift. That's his talent. But off stage, although he absolutely made us laugh often, you know, he was a different kind of person. And I love that we got that person. Everybody else got Brendan Grace, the entertainer. We got a more vulnerable version of that. And, you know, my dad actually really enjoys his own time. He loves to sit in a corner with his iPad. His favorite pastime is writing cards and letters to family and friends all over the world. We often joke that had my father not gone into this business, he definitely would have been a postal worker, because I've never seen somebody to be at the post office as often as my dad. He just loved to send cards and letters, and knowing that the people who would receive them would open up and smile and have a great day as a result. And he'd put funny things in it, like you'd be liable to get a card with, you know, a melted Kit Kat glued to the inside of it. And he'd say, "Have a break, have a Kit Kat," you know, something funny like that. Yeah.
We've heard from listeners today who have had those cards over the years. Yeah. He was certainly prolific, wasn't he?
Yes, he certainly was. And Katie, I just want to mention, before I forget, the staff at the Galway Clinic. I just cannot say enough thanks on behalf of me, my mother, my siblings, all of our partners, my dad's sister, all of our family and friends. I just want to say a very, very heartfelt thank you to the staff, the doctors, the beautiful nurses who laughed with us and cried with us and held us. You know, my sister came up with this beautiful term that since this happened, we have been held. We've been held by people. We've been held by energy. And, you know, in such a horrible circumstance, things couldn't have gone smoother, if there's such a way to say it. And, you know, I have so many people that I want to thank, and I will, you know, get to that. And I'm sure we'll all sit down and take over the card writing for Dad. But we also stayed at the Clayton Hotel, and the staff there couldn't do enough for us. And, you know, it's just been absolutely amazing. And we just want everyone to know how grateful we are for the outpouring of support.
I'm sure everyone will appreciate that. I suppose the way you're describing it, Melanie, is like that phrase we have, a good death, which is probably one of those special things any family could ask for.
Yes, absolutely. And we were all with Dad. We were all sitting around him. We were holding him and we were talking to him. And my mother, who is, you know, his rock and always has been. Through this entire time, she gave him such comfort. And I truly believe that it is the comfort that my mom gave him that made his passing so gentle. And any time, if she even snuck into the bathroom, our pact together was, our dad will not be left alone in this room for 1 minute while we're here. So we all had shifts and we'd all meet up together and, you know, it was a celebration. But if my mother stepped out of the room for a second, he'd say, "Where's my beautiful Eileen?" Or if he was feeling, you know, a bit funny, he'd say, "Where's me ma?" And we'd have to go and get his ma from. And when we did, and he laid his eyes on her, his whole body would just sink into a beautiful deep calm. And he kept kissing her and thanking her for being his rock. And it was the most beautiful thing. It was, you know, they had a beautiful marriage, and it was evident in their final moments together that, you know, the strength in their partnership was really what helped him release.
And, of course, that he was able to be surrounded by all of you at that time.
All of us. And, you know, my siblings, my husband, my sister's husband, my brother's wife, our three beautiful boys, Gaga's grandkids, his sister Marie, and his best pal, you know, Brian Keane. And, oh, you know, I could go on and mention names, his beloved manager, Tom Kelly. You know, everyone got to be there and, you know, see him. It was really just family at the very end. But if I could ever imagine someone passing so deservedly beautifully, he did that. He really did.
And he actually made time, because we've had friends of his in touch with us today, mm-hmm. to meet friends just over last weekend, and was up and joking with them. And
everyone that came in to see him, and we'd ask him every time. We had a lovely little, there's a little waiting room, and we'd ask people to stay there, and we'd come in and we'd say, "Dad, you know, such and such is here. Have you got the energy?" And he'd say, bring them in. And when they'd come in, he would have a one-liner ready to go. You know, just funny stuff that, you know, would roll off his tongue. And nobody was expecting that. I think nobody was actually expecting him to be so ill, though, either, when he came in, because the decline was quite sudden, having just been diagnosed a couple of weeks ago. But he didn't let on to anybody, you know, that he was scared or worried. And I genuinely believe it's because he wasn't either of those things. My dad is a great man of faith, and he kept pointing up to Jesus on the cross and, you know, telling us that, you know, he was with him, and talking about his dear parents and how he was looking forward to seeing them. And my father has a huge connection to the Red Robin. I don't know if that's public knowledge, but you know, anytime, even when living, when we see a Red Robin, we think of Dad. He's a big bird feeder, loves feeding the birds. So he told us that he would make several appearances to us. And I can tell you something, I'll never throw a piece of bread in the bin again, because I'd be terrified I'd be starving my father. I'd be throwing bread out to the birds every morning for the rest of my life.
So you're waiting for that Robin to come.
And I know that Robin will come. I know it will, because he promised that he would never leave us, and we believe that to be true.
That is a beautiful, beautiful thought, Melanie. Can you stay there, Melanie, because we have a lot of your father's friends have been on to us, and they'd like to pay tribute to him and to pass on their good wishes to you. I think Finbar Fury, are you on the line?
I am.
Finbar, you knew Brendan really, really well, of course, but spent, I understand, 5 weeks, 24/7 with him, crossing Australia at one point.
We did, yeah. We did a tour back a few years ago there. It was fantastic with Frankie, Melanie's husband, my young fella Finbar, my youngest son, Brendan, and Mark Wilkinson, who did the tour. And I never laughed so much in all my life, as Melanie said. He had a great love of life, you know. And life to Brendan was a funny, he'd make fun of life. No matter how bad you felt in the morning, I used to actually get away from him, because he'd make me laugh so much I'd be getting sick, you know, in the morning. He'd pick on something and he'd stick at it until he'd have you crippled, you know. And he was wonderful. It was a terrific tour. And my uncle Finbar, of course, he made huge time for Finney. And at the time, his foot was bad. You know, he just got one of his toes removed. And I remember we were in Perth, and his foot got infected a bit, so we had to bring him along to this doctor. And the only thing we could get on his foot, but to keep it from off the ground, was a cooler, which you put over a bottle of beer, you know. And his doctor had strapped his cooler on, you know, and at the front of the cooler was written Foster's. He would walk on stage, you know, at the night, and with his cooler on his foot. And he'd make a joke about the cooler, you know, and the Foster's written on the front of it. Like, we just every day, you know, this, we had to make room for the cooler on the foot. And I remember we nearly missed the flight in Perth because he wanted a couple of pies, and there was no way he was going without these two Australian beef pies. My uncle was pushing him down the middle of the airport with as fast as he could in the wheelchair because the plane was taking off, and we had to hold the plane for him. And he came back with these three pies, and he got into his seat beside young Finbar and Frank. And all he heard was chomp, 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 you know, while he was milling these three pies. And, of course, it was crumbs everywhere, you know. And eventually, she came down and put a piece of paper under him, one of the stewardesses. And we had such a... I can't describe it. Every day, he turned around to me one day and he says to me, "Do you know something, Fury?" I said, "What?" He said, "As men get older," he said, "did you know as our ears get bigger?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "And," he said, "we get deafer." Stuff like that you'd open up with. But I think Darwin was, we had a wonderful concert in Darwin, which was the first gig that we had. And we went to a restaurant afterwards. And just again, you know, there was a big... it was like a bouncer, you know, and you couldn't smoke in the bar, and I was rolling a cigarette anyway, and so I had to stand outside, you know, and your man says, "No, you have to smoke 30 metres away from the bar." So Brendan says to him, "Well, if he smokes 30 metres away from this bar, he's going to be in that other bar across the road." You know, and it was stuff like that. I mean, and I just... Yeah, he was just so funny. And there was another one. "Good morning, Melanie."
"Hello, how are you, love?"
"Just lost my heart with that. I couldn't talk to your man this morning."
"I know, darling.
I forced it to tears."
"I know it."
I was, you know, what a great lady. Eileen is, you know, a fantastic woman. The whole family, the whole line is fantastic.
Thanks, Ben.
I had some great times down in Florida when we went down to open up the restaurant. We were there for a week.
Don't be giving away too many stories.
I'll let him give them away there, Melanie.
A few years back. But, you know, he was a great... We opened up, first of all, I think this is a thing that people should know. In Canberra, you have the Irish History Museum about the Irish in Australia and how they built Australia. And a lot of it is to do with the women, the Irish women who followed their men out, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember being told, and Brendan said, imagine they had maybe 7 and 8 kids, and if one of the kids survived, you know, they were lucky. These women built Australia, he says, not the men, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was so right about it, you know. And he was a great lover of theatre, a great speaker, and a complete ambassador for Irish sense of humour. Mm-hmm. I remember that day when he did the speech, the opening speech of the Irish Museum, and it was wonderful just to watch him. And I remember playing a piece of music called Connery's afterwards on the pipes. Mm-hmm. And we had he was so important to Irish, you know, a sense of theatre. I reckon if he had it really taken up acting seriously, he would have been an absolute brilliant actor, you know. He had everything.
Yeah.
He had everything. Wonderful man. Wonderful speaker.
Thanks for that lovely tribute, Finn. That's lovely.
Lovely, lovely, lovely man.
Thank you.
I'm going to... Melanie, you mentioned there the people who visited Brendan over the last week, and I think I have one of them on the phone here now. Noel V. Ginnity.
Oh, yes. Hi, Noel.
Oh, hello, Melanie, dear. How are you?
Good, lovely.
Nice to talk to you.
Noel, you saw him just a few days ago.
I was with Georgie Hunter, Red Hurley and myself were there on Saturday morning, and we had a few minutes with Eileen and Melanie before we went into the room, and the whole thing was beautiful. And Eileen told me a little story. She said he was going to wait for her on the moon.
Yeah.
And then the two of them could walk away.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very poignant and very lovely. And I have great memories of Brendan then. Rogue, like. He used to say, I laughed so much and he got my cancer. But he was in love with the guy, you know. And when I met him on Saturday, he said, you're down for your act. And I said, no, I'm down to try and get the diary off you. He's going to get a few gigs. But this man, hello?
Noel, hello? You're still there, Noel.
It was unreal that this man is dead, because he was sitting on the side of the bed and we laughed and laughed and we had a great time, the whole lot of us. Eileen was there, and it's unreal that he's gone, because if somebody called me from America and says Brendan was dead, well, I'd accept that, all right. But I found it difficult to believe all that last 2 weeks that he was going to die, and but now he's gone.
It was also very difficult for us, because what happened to us last night, my father passed away at about 12, I believe 25 or 6 or something like that. But at about 11:30, our phones literally started lighting up to the point where we had to turn them off. And what had happened was somebody had written that he had already passed away. And so we were receiving condolences from people.
I was with Brendan and Ivy. Brendan bought a horse one time, and we went down to a fellow called Sean Tracy, a nice man, was training it for him. And we went down to look at it, and the two of us did something about horses. But then it ran in Navan, the first time it ran, and we went down. And I backed the horse with Seamus Urbani, the bookie, but I backed it each way. And Brendan backed it to win, so it was third. So I drew me ready. I got money. But Brendan didn't get any ready. And he never went to the races again, not because he lost, but because he was famous. He couldn't walk around the place. They were at him all the time, stopping him and starting him. And so he didn't enjoy that encounter. So I don't think he ever raced again, you know?
We've got so many people coming in on the phone lines here, Noel. Red Hurley?
Hiya.
How are you, Red? You brought Brendan a dog.
Yeah, I did indeed. A long time ago, he was getting married, you see, to Eileen. And by the way, wasn't that a wonderful tribute from his daughter, Melanie?
Hiya, Red. How are you?
How are you, darling? You're wonderful.
My dad always called my mother. He always said, I love my wife, Kathleen. Eileen.
Anyway, listen, I bought him a dog, him and Eileen, an Afghan hound as a present for the wedding. And they gave me a beautiful gold Tag Heuer pocket watch as a present for singing at their wedding, which was a beautiful affair out in Dublin Airport. And I enjoyed that very much. But I thought it was very strange when we showed up there last week to say hello to him down in the hospital in Galway. He says, now, there's one thing I want you to do, Red, for me. When I go... I thought it was extraordinary the way he was able to talk about it. Mm-hmm. He says, would you please sing that song you sang at our wedding, Where Would I Begin?
From Love Story.
From Love Story. And I thought, what, you know, Brendan was blessed with a family that loved him so, so much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an extraordinary thing. It was just, to listen to Melanie there earlier on speaking, it was just wonderfully moving. You'll have a great gift, Melanie, there.
Oh, but
so anyway, we had the end of that story was that the Afghan hound at Eileen's boots. So they had to sell it or get rid of it or give it away or something. Anyway, that's all.
Thanks, Fred.
So he Brendan actually asked you to sing this song again for him.
Yeah, that's what was 45 years ago, and we were only kids really when you think back on it. And it was a wonderful wedding, and one of the songs was Love Story was out at the time in the movies, and he related it to his Eileen. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? And then would you sing it for me, please, Red? I had actually done it at an anniversary do a couple of years ago.
It's hard to believe, you know, we never thought that we'd be able to sit in a room as a family and discuss funeral arrangements. My father
was so open about it.
And he told us exactly what he wanted, where he wanted it, what would be special. You know, I mean, we did it so lovingly and so openly, and we asked questions, and my sister sat there with a notebook and she kept writing everything down, and my brothers, you know, asked more specific questions to make sure that everything that he wanted was going to happen so that we could celebrate this man and give him the send-off that he absolutely deserves, and that's what will happen.
Brendan and Eileen
were a very special couple, and they knew they had a great gift between each other of love, because it's so rare that you see such a strong bond between two people right through their lives.
Dad used to always joke, Red, that what kept them together was that they would go on a date night twice a week. He'd go out on a Monday and she'd go out on a Thursday. And that was the secret to their 45-year marriage.
That was a good one.
Melanie, you were saying that he planned himself the funeral.
Did. Yep, he absolutely did. The first thing he said to us, and he knew that it was delicate in the beginning, he said, "I want to go back to the Liberties." And it was his opening line to invite us into a conversation about a funeral. And, you know, initially we were like, "Now you want us to take you to the..." Like, you know, it was so surreal to imagine what he was trying to say. And he said, "I was brought into the Liberties," he says, "and I want to go out from the Liberties." And when we kind of got the hang of what he was doing, you know, again, he handed us the strength on a plate and said, "Let's talk about this," you know. And when he told us how it would be and how he'd want it to be, his words were, "I just wish that I could be there to see it."
Yeah, that's the kind of attitude he had towards. Really upbeat, happy-go-lucky. When I walked in to see him in the hospital, I thought, there's nothing wrong with this fella.
Red, you got him on a great day. You and I looked at each other, and I said to you, "I think this fella's having us on." And you said to me, "You're after giving me a bit of hope."
Yeah.
And we really, every day that we saw him sitting up, I kind of said, maybe, because my father was a huge Padre Pio man, and that came from his mother.
Yeah.
And he had Padre Pio in his room. A dear friend of his from the Armada Hotel down in Spanish Point, Johnny Burke, he claims that his mass card just appeared in the room from somewhere. It must have been caught up in a book or something that he brought into the room. He held onto that mass card, and it's Johnny Burke, and then on the other side it's Padre Pio. And even in his, you know, in the final hours yesterday, he kind of just checked his chest to make sure it was there.
Well, it was very obvious, Melanie, that he had a real deep faith.
Oh, yes, yeah.
A real deep faith, you know, because he believed...
He has strength in ours.
Yeah, of course he did, yeah. It was wonderful to watch, by the way. Yeah.
Red, thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, love.
Melanie, you say, did he ask for special music? What is there anything else? Obviously, this is a private planning for yourselves and for your family.
Yeah.
But is there anything else that he'd like you to share with us?
I mean, you know, Dublin, in the rare old times, of course, is one that touches him deeply. The words, you know, might as well have been written for him. So that will certainly feature. And he has requested for Finbar and Red Hurley. And then we have our own little things as well that we're planning as a little surprise for him. So besides that, you know, it's just going to be a celebration of his life. You know, he told us to grieve and let there be tears, he said, but please let there be plenty of laughter and have everyone sing the songs. He doesn't want a quiet church. When the songs are playing, he wants everyone to be singing. So this is going to be very, very special. It's going to be hard, but it's going to be very special.
Was he an emotional man, Melanie?
Very. My father was a very deeply emotional person, very sensitive. Things affected him. You know, my mother, I'm sure, would say the same thing, that he had a very deep empathy for people and for situations. And humour was how he dealt with everything. It was the one emotion that he did really, really well
was humour. You know, there was no room in our home for watching sad movies. It had to be, you know, funny all the time. It was just his way of coping with everything.
If Brendan thought he had offended anybody in any smallest little way, mm-hmm. it would hurt him deeply.
Oh, deeply, yeah.
He was very sensitive with people. Very, very mm-hmm. sensitive to people.
Yeah.
Lovely man.
Yeah.
He had a great heart.
He had a wonderful heart. I remember when we were in Perth.
Finbar.
Finbar here. Just, there was a couple of kids came over and he asked them where they lived and the whole lot, and he said, I'll send your ma's a card, you know, and tell them that you're doing fine. And the kids actually phoned up to our parents, you know, and both of us spoke on the phone too. I would have never thought of it, but Brendan brought it up and Brendan got the phone to say that we told our parents that they were okay, they were with us. And, mm-hmm. you know, he promised them that he would send a card. And everywhere we went, he would do that, you know.
He loved that, yeah.
Incredible. He loved people, you know, mm-hmm. And he made room for everybody, you know. He was a gorgeous man.
Melanie, stay with us and please, Finbar and Noel and Red, stay with us because we have lots more friends of Brendan ringing in to share their memories of him. But we'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we're remembering the late, great Brendan Grace today. Mike Hanron of the great Stockton's Wing, tell us about the time that Brendan met Frank Sinatra.
Oh, that was in about 1989. Sinatra was over with Sammy Davis Jr. and with Liza Minnelli, and they were doing the ultimate event in Lansdowne. And Brendan and the Wing were invited to do a private party the night before the show in Lansdowne. And we arrived and played first, and then Brendan did his stint. We had Sammy Davis come over to us and started chatting to us about all music and invited us onto the stage with him the following night in Lansdowne. And Sinatra was blown away by Brendan's performance. And Brendan ended up going out to Vegas and doing loads of work out there. So,
and was that the start of it? Was that how Brendan's career took off in the States?
Well, I'd say he used to go over because there was a lot of Irish festivals over there at the time. We met Brendan quite a lot at festivals, Irish festivals in America or touring in Australia. So, but that gave him, I think that gave him a different lift up a few levels. I'm sure he loved us and he was great. We toured in Australia a few times and he was just magnificent. I just want to say my condolences and heartfelt condolences to Melanie, to Frankie, all the family, Eileen, from everybody in the Wing.
I'll pass that all along. Yep.
So in Australia, we toured quite a lot, but I have one great memory of, I was at home this morning looking at old videos of Brendan, but I wasn't aware of Brendan had passed, and I was doing something for Brian Redden, who was doing a documentary, and I discovered all these old footage from Australia. There was one great one for Brendan. At the very end of the tour, he arrived into the dressing room and stripped, and then started dancing on the suit, the shirt, the trousers, the tie.
Are you telling me that there's footage of that somewhere?
Oh, it's very private.
Please keep it that way.
All very private. Yeah, but I'm just saying, I had it this morning. It was really so good. And then there was a scene on we were out in a yacht on Sydney Bay. Brendan just entertained everybody. Mm-hmm. And he was an inclusive man.
Speaking of Brian Redden, you know, Brian came into my dad's life, you know, not so long ago, and at a very poignant time, and he put the whole documentary together. And, you know, Brian came into him just recently at Dad's request. I'm talking about maybe 3 days ago. I want to say maybe on Monday. Dad had asked Brian to come back into the hospital because they were halfway through a series that they were doing with RTE. And, you know, Dad was adamant that he was going to finish it, even from his hospital bed. And so Brian came in on Sunday after a long flight from holidays, and himself and Jerry got incredible footage of my dad, while myself and my sister Amanda and my husband Frank stood in the room watching this very sick man speaking into the camera. And it's some of the most vulnerable, beautiful footage that we'll ever see, and we get to have that. That's a gift to us. So I just want to say a big thank you to Brian Redden and RTE for giving us these gifts that we get to have for the rest of our lives. My dad was he was with a group called the Forget Me Nots, led by Nora Owen. These are a group of people who are suffering on some level with Alzheimer's, whether they're patients or caregivers, and they're a beautiful choir. And they sang The Dutchman with my dad. My dad's been singing that song for many, many years.
I've heard it, and indeed. I think it's, and he sings it beautifully. He sings it so beautifully.
But what he didn't realise, nor did any of us until later, is that that song is about Alzheimer's. And when you listen to the words, it's the most beautiful and saddening song. And for them to pick that and to sing that with the forget-me-nots, you know, they sent him a beautiful card and... you know, they appreciate everything that he did with them, but this documentary is going to be finished.
We just have that track now, Melanie.
Yeah.
To keep his thumb jammed in the dam that holds his dreams in. But that's a secret only Margaret knows. When Amsterdam's golden in the morning, Margaret brings him breakfast. She believes him. He thinks the tulips bloom beneath the snow. He's mad as he can be, but Margaret only sees that sometimes. She often sees her unborn children in his eyes. Let us go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the Zuider Zee. Long ago, I used to be a young man, and dear Margaret remembers that for me. The Dutchman still wears wooden shoes, his cap and coat are patched with the love that Margaret sewed in. Sometimes he thinks he's still in Rotterdam. He watches tugboats down canals and calls out to them when he thinks he knows the captain. Then Margaret comes to take him home again, through unforgiving streets that trip him, though she holds his arm. Sometimes he thinks that he's alone and he calls her name. Let us go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the Zuider Zee. Long ago.
Melanie, it's incredible to hear Brendan's voice there and what a beautiful job he does with that song. And in some ways, it from what we've been talking about, Brendan's relationship with your mom, with Eileen.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes he thinks that he's alone and calls her name.
Oh, stop it. When he sang that lyric there, that's exactly what I had just said earlier. You know, it's funny, myself and my family are just saying every song that we're hearing, the lyrics mean something totally new to us. We're hearing lyrics that we never heard before because we're relating them. They're so relatable to this current situation, you know.
Melanie, you were thanking Brian Redden there, and,
yeah,
and we've got Brian has called in to us.
Oh, Brian. Hiya, Brian.
How are you, Mel? How's it going?
How are you doing?
Yeah,
we had Sunday there. Was it Sunday or Monday?
Oh, I can't remember. Was it Sunday or Monday? Sunday we went down, yeah.
Yeah.
It was fascinating. What Mel's talking about there is Brendan had asked us to come down.
Yeah.
You know, we're making this documentary with Brendan, as Melanie said there, about the choir called the Forget Me Nots. They featured in the documentary we did last year with Brendan. And Brendan recorded The Dutchman with them, which he just played, and he gave all the proceeds to the Alzheimer's and Dementia Ireland. Didn't take a penny from it. That's the kind of guy he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to do this documentary follow-up series, which is called Brendan Grace, Thanks for the Memories.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was basically Brendan was kind of looking back on his own career, looking back on his own memories, and helping the choir to put on a show in the Olympia Theatre to kind of raise awareness for dementia and just kind of celebrate them and him and his own career. And he was calling on all his old friends and all his old buddies to come and perform in the show.
Yeah.
So Brendan got sick, and we thought, well, we have to, you know, what else can we do? That's it. And that's the, it was just a shock to everybody. But not, he wanted to finish it, and he said, come
he
down here.
He was adamant. He was so adamant. And Brian came down, and Jerry, and set up in this in the little hospital room, and we all stood around. And Brian, your interview this morning was beautiful, and it was quite an experience, wasn't it?
It was the most difficult thing I've ever done in my entire career in television, I have to say. I've never been asked to do anything like that, and he was adamant that he wanted to do it, as you said. So we sat down, and we chatted, and we talked for a while, and then we set up the camera, and then we rolled the camera. And this man, as counsel, this man is well aware of what's happening to him. And yes, he wanted to say, this thing has got to go on, this documentary can't stop, but this documentary must be completed. And I want to help the choir, I want to help to get awareness out there about Alzheimer's. And I was just blown away by that. I mean, I know he has a huge heart, and I knew he was so generous and kind and caring and giving to everybody. Mm-hmm. And here he is in his dying breath, thinking of other people. I mean, he's an unbelievable human being.
Yeah, absolutely, Brian, and I appreciate that. And, you know, he loved that song, Thanks for the Memories. And at one point I said to him, what about Frank Sinatra's song, I Did It My Way? Because you did it your way. Dad always did things as he wanted. And he said, no, he said, because there's a lyric in there that says, regrets, I have a few. And he said, I have none. Yeah. And, like, he was so sure of these things, you know. It was, he's an incredible person. He's an inspiration to us all.
And he wanted to call this show, and Brendan came up with the title himself. I was sitting there, what are we going to call this, Brendan? What are we going to call it? And he came up with the title, Thanks for the Memories.
Yeah.
And he was adamant he wanted to call it that. So then he was adamant that he wanted to sing it on camera when we were down with him during the week. And he did. And he said, I want this show to go ahead. It's going to culminate in a concert, which will now be a brilliant tribute to Brendan. And he wanted to have the last word. He wanted to sing Thanks for the Memories. So we filmed him singing Thanks for the Memories. He gave us the first verse. We had to give him the lyrics, though. Mel had to find the lyrics for him.
Then he couldn't see it on the phone, and he just said, I'm making up my own verse.
He just said, to hell with it. I'm not reading the lyrics. I'll just make up my own. I'll do it as I go along. Go on, film me.
Brian, can I ask you a question, Brian? Did he come up with that title before his diagnosis?
Yep.
My goodness, isn't that so apt?
It's the most apt title I can think of.
Oh,
I couldn't think of
goodness.
Anything more apt. But he came up with that about 3 or 4 months ago. He wanted to call it that, which is amazing. And now, as you said, you listen to every song that your dad is singing on the radio, and it has an added poignancy now. Every single thing we've done with him has an added poignancy now, including the title of the series.
Everything.
So he sings it first. There he is on camera. I mean, he wanted... it's just amazing thought. This man sits down and he says, I want you to play this into the Olympia Theatre, and here, I'll start off the song, and I want everybody to finish it.
Yeah,
and he looks down the lens, and he sings, Thanks for the Memories.
And then he kind of
points
out.
I can't remember
out.
The lyrics because he made them up himself, but it was an amazing moment. It really was, you know?
It really was, yeah. It was a pleasure to be in that room at that moment.
And it's great to know that this has all been captured on film.
Oh, it's a gift. I thank Brian for that. That's a gift that we will have for the rest of our lives, and that our grandkids will have, or his grandkids. You know, it's very special.
Stay with us, because I want to go to Margot, Queen of Country and Irish Music. Margot, you have great memories of Brendan.
I have one. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Margot.
I talked to your mom this morning.
I know you did.
And he rang me last week, you know. And he cared for me. And him and I were planning a duet. He had picked an old cowboy song from way back when, and he always wanted to record it. So we were going to do it this year, you know. And, I mean, back at when I started out in the business, you know, it was a man's world there. But when I met Brendan, and Brendan Grace always treated me with respect.
Yeah.
He came down with Eileen only a couple of months ago. He wanted to visit Big Tom's statue, and indeed, he was in Florida when Big Tom died, and he wrote to me, also to the McBride. And he came down and he visited with the statue. And I said to him, I said, you know, it's great to see, he was standing beside Big Tom's statue, and I said, it's great to see the king of country music and the king of comedy standing side by side.
Mm-hmm.
This was a man, he wasn't just loved in Dublin. Every country artist that I know loved Brendan Grace. Yeah. You know, my brother Daniel lived in Sagar beside him, and he used to go up to visit my mother. My mother was sick one time in Donegal, and Brendan came down on a helicopter to see her. You know, this is, we never heard about the things. Brendan would ring me up, and sometimes I'd be down, and, you know, he'd ring me again to see if I was okay.
Yeah.
And when he rang me last week, well, I know Eileen put the call through, and I thank your mother so much, Melanie, for all the contact and everything. But he said to me, you know, I'm going out the same way I came in.
Oh, he sang that in the hospital. He sang it in the hospital. We put the track on.
Yeah.
And, like, we're all sitting there looking at him going, is this happening? I mean, I don't think we realised at the time because, you know, we held out till the very last
I said it to your mother this morning. I said, you know, even though Brendan was ill, I never, ever thought of him going, leaving us. But he said, when I get there, he said, when I hug my mum and my dad, he says, I'm going to look for Big Tom and your mother.
Yeah.
So I know today, I wish I was up there among them. They're having some party. But Brendan will never be replaced, the same as Big Tom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they loved one another. The admiration those two men had for each other.
Well, Margot, absolutely. And when he looked, like, we looked at the photos of him with the Big Tom, the statue, and he said to us, now, I want a statue as well, and I want it to be me holding hands with Little Bottler. Now, we're in floods in the room thinking about this. He told us where he wants it to be, who's going to do it for him. I mean, it was remarkable.
Honestly, we have to make that.
We have to make that happen. And you better believe that we will make that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that needs to
Wouldn't
be done.
Wouldn't that be beautiful? Yeah. And, Margo, you also mentioned respect. And my father is somebody who is so incredibly respectful. He always said, you know, to his elders, I'm always very respectful. He was respectful to everybody. But, you know, when the doctors would come into the room, he would greet them with, sir, thank you, sir. Yes, sir, you know, and I appreciate you. And the nurses would come in and he'd open up his arms and he'd say to them, I love yous. I just love yous.
Oh,
you
he was so loving. And something else, you know, and I know it happened to me and dozens of other people. If we were doing an interview on a radio and Brendan was in the car, before mobile phones, he would stop and phone the station and say hi.
Or simple little things, you know, if we ever went out to eat when we were sitting at a table, if one of the ladies left the table, he stood up. No matter what, if he was in the middle of a bite, he would stand up.
Yeah.
You know, he had the beautiful chivalrous qualities about him, you know, right up until the very end.
Absolutely. And I am so honoured that I can call him my friend.
Oh, Margo,
and my sympathies to all the family.
Thank you so much for that, Margo.
On behalf of all the country music artists, our sympathies to you. And we love you, Brendan, and we're going to miss you like hell.
And Margo, you mentioned all the things that Brendan did for so many people, and we have some listeners coming up now with lovely stories about the things that Brendan did for them.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we're having a very special show today. We're with Melanie Gillespie, Brendan Grace's daughter, sharing memories of the great Brendan Grace. Paddy Corrigan.
Hiya, Katie.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon and condolences to Melanie and Eileen and the family.
Thank you.
I just got a lovely little story I'd like to share. But my father is from Dunlavin in County Wicklow, where Brendan's father came from.
Mm-hmm.
And when my father moved to Dublin first, he worked for Brendan as a barman. Brendan's father as a barman. And later on, when Brendan owned the Black Church Inn, he worked for Brendan for a little while, I suppose, in the 80s when times were hard and people had to get two jobs. But he was always a big fan of Brendan's and never kept in touch or anything, but went to see Brendan a few times and you know, he'd always say to us, oh, there's my old buddy Brendan, you know. But my father, he has Lewy body dementia and he's in a nursing home and he mounts healthcare. 3.5 years now. But towards the end of, I think it was December 2017, I saw an ad for one of Brendan's shows on the television, and I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if I could maybe ask Brendan to send Pat a little note or a little video where he could, you know, wish him well or send him a nice message. So I went searching on Facebook, found a page for Brendan and sent a message. Brendan's tour manager, got back to me within about an hour and asked me for my number. He said Brendan would like to ring me. And the following evening, Brendan rang and he asked me if he could visit my dad. And I said to him, I'm sure, of course you can visit, but, you know, you're a busy man, I don't want to... And he said, no, he says, I'd love to visit him. So he was going to Belfast on the Friday, and he said, he asked me, could I meet him there? And, of course, he came up, and my dad, he'd be quite good with faces and that sort of thing. So he remembered him, of course, and they were reminiscing, and now Brendan brought him up a nice box of chocolates or sweets and a little signed book of jokes, and they had a good old chat about, you know, my dad would have known cousins of Brendan's, Tim and he did a good old chat, but he was brilliant with the staff. The staff were delighted to have him there. You know, he was a real charmer and a great crack. And my mum actually had one of his CDs on when he came in, which is a bit embarrassing now, but he enjoyed it, yeah. But it was a lovely thing to do. And, you know, afterwards I walked him back out to Brian in the car. And you know, he spent a good of an hour in there between having a chat with my dad and saying hello to some of the other patients and, you know, having a chat and telling a few jokes with the nurses and the carers.
Yeah.
But when I walked him back out, I said, look, I said, you really didn't have to, you know, and he said, no, I wanted to. He said, I wanted to, and I think one of his big fears was that himself or Eileen would end up with, dementia.
He did actually fear that, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, he
took that time really for delighted. Your dad, yeah.
He was really delighted, but he couldn't understand why I was so...
great.
Impressed,
yeah.
With him, you know, because that was just something that he did. It was what he does, you know.
Well, it fits with everything, Paddy, that we've heard about Brendan Grace today. And
yeah.
I want to go to Philip Tobin, because Philip, you have another reason to be very grateful to Brendan Grace.
Well, absolutely. Brendan is a true gentleman, and in the entertainment business, which is unfortunately populated by some rascals along the way, Brendan was a gem amongst gems. He was absolutely a wonderful guy to deal with on a professional basis. My story relates to a situation where I was manager of a nightclub in Dublin in the early 70s called Sloopy's. Brendan approached me. He was finishing up with the Ginger Men, and he was looking for a gig as a solo player. I didn't think it was compatible with a disco situation, but I put him in anyway, and he went down a bomb. Now, bear in mind, nobody knew him at the time, and within probably 2 months, our Thursday nights were full to the brim with Brendan telling jokes, singing songs, and really set the place up on a Thursday night. So that was a great introduction to Brendan Grace. However, a couple of years later, I branched out on my own. I opened a couple of nightclubs, one in the Woodlands Hotel in Greystones, and the other one in the Arklow Bay Hotel. Both of them were struggling to get the punters in. So I thought, I'll try Brendan. Maybe he was a big name at the time, big attraction, superstar. I rang him, I got made contact with him, and he said, not a problem. I said, no, this is the itchy part. How much, Brendan? I tell you what I'll do, Philip. He said, I'll do it for nothing. Just look after the roadies. And that was it. Brendan arrived, full house, Greystones, packed to the brim. And he put on a wonderful show. He established a nightclub in that venue for me in the long term. And the very same situation applied in the Arklow Bay Hotel. Same thing, no fee, look after the roadie. We'll have a chat. Sure, it's old times. You look after me, I'll look after you. End of story.
I'm surprised that he didn't tell you to pay him in drink, because I think he did that a few times. And then they ended up actually paying him money because he was costing them more in drink.
Well, I'm not going to breach confidentiality with Brendan. I'm just saying the deal with me was just look after the roadies. Now, we would have had a couple of beers together at the bar, you know.
Mm.
But the following on from all of that, I hadn't seen Brendan, and certainly hadn't dealt with him in a professional capacity for years, but did bump into him and Eileen around the town, and we always had a bit of a chat, and he always had time for you, you know. However, I became the entertainment manager at the Hampton Hotel here in Donnybrook, which was formerly Saks, and we put in a dinner theatre club due to be launched last September. Brendan heard about it. He rang me. He said, listen, he said, I love the notion of a dinner theatre club. I used to perform at the Clontarf Castle Hotel, and there aren't any around at the moment. I'd love to do a gig there for you. So he came in and did a gig on our opening night, absolute full house, and that was in September of last year. Then again in October, another full house. Then again in November, another full house. Wonderful, wonderful to deal with. And I can't say anything except the word legend applies to anybody. It applies to Brendan Grace. He's by far, I would say, the most decent man, particularly in the entertainment business I've ever met. And it was a pleasure to be with him there on the few occasions he was with us at the Hampton.
Philip, thank you for that, Phil, because I want to tell you, Melanie, we are getting a stream of calls from people with stories about how your dad helped them.
Oh, I can imagine.
Gina Hetherington?
Hi, how are you?
How are you? Tell us your memory of Brendan.
Well, I was backpacking in Tesco's in Naas back in the late 90s for our charity Paws Animal Rescue. And next thing I spot this superhero, Brendan Grace, in the queue. And he came up and we did his little bit of packing and he had a brief chat. And I gave him a little leaflet that I used to print out myself out of the computer. That was before the fancy days of printing. And he took the leaflet and he went off quietly, and that was grand. And about 3 weeks later, we got a letter in the post complimenting us on our great work and a check for 100 quid.
Aww.
Now, back in that time, that was a lot of money.
Mm.
And like, he didn't know us from Adam. He just had read our leaflet. He'd seen the kids backpacking, and he obviously was an animal lover.
He was an animal lover. Yeah. And you know, it's funny, I remember many, many times, especially when he was on, you know, the road, if he ever found a stray dog, he would go to the nearest, he'd either go to the nearest shop and buy a can of dog food if the shop was open, and if it wasn't open, we would wake up to a dog in the morning. He would bring stray dogs home with him, or he'd
feed
them.
That's how I got into this game.
Well, there you go. So that's where his heart was when he sent you that, I can promise you.
Yeah, and when you mentioned him writing letters, I said to myself, you know, he probably went home and he read the leaflet and he sat down maybe the next week to write his letters and he said, I must send them a few quid.
Yeah.
And it was so generous. It was so kind of him, because a lot of celebrities, in inverted commas, promise the world and never do anything. And he
was a man of
anything,
his word. Yeah.
But he just quietly sent the money a couple of weeks later.
That's lovely.
And as I say,
he'll be sadly missed.
Indeed, Gina. We've many, many more of these stories. 1850-715-815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And we're with Brendan Grace's daughter, Melanie, sharing memories of Brendan. Noel Wallace, tell us about your memories of Brendan.
Hi, Katie. Hi, Melanie. How are you? We have a little restaurant and hotel in Bunratty, and Brendan came in, I suppose, 18 years ago, and once you meet him, you're friends. He was so affable. But I remember he was on the late, or maybe one night a couple of years later. And I remember I texted him after, and I said, "This is a wonderful interview." And I texted at the end of it, and it, very nice tie you were wearing. But sure, 2 days later, the tie came in the post. You know, he was, and like whenever he was, I'm into kind of ties and that. And if they're in the States, Ireland, just, you know, you get a tie every, you get two or three ties a year. Like, I have enough ties now to have the rest of my days. But last year, then in 2018, I had an extended stay myself in hospital, and Brendan and Eileen both decided, look, we have to call up and see you. So anyway, we arranged a date to come up, and I told the nurses. And they were over the moon. I mean, they were like, it was like God was coming today, you know. It was unbelievable. And when he came in, he was so accommodating with all those girls. You know, he took selfies and pictures and the whole lot, and they were really thrilled with him, you know. And again, the following day, all DVDs, CDs, signed and all for those nurses.
Wow.
in Galway. And it was just a measure of the man, you know. He had time for everybody. He had unconditional love of people. You know, he was really incredible man, and we'll miss him terribly.
Indeed. Thelma Fox, McFadden, you, Brendan did a very special thing for your mum and dad.
He did, he did. We have our own fun fair and we were down in Killaloe at the time. And Brendan, Melanie and her husband and their son were down. And it's very funny because the first time I just happened to be in, let's say I was in the shop and I noticed these people coming down. I said, oh, that's Brendan, great. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of minutes later, I was in another ride and they came over. So we just did a few complimentary passes. That was it, you know, moved on. And a couple of hours maybe later, Melanie's husband came over to me and he came over to thank me for the passes, that type of thing. And as we came into conversation, he told me he was from Tyrrell's Pass. And that he had remembered my mum and dad's roadshow, that Harry and Eileen McFadden used to come to Tyrrell's Pass every year. Now, the next morning, Melanie and her husband came back with armfuls of CDs and DVDs for me that Brendan had sent down to thank me. So a few months later, he was playing out in Newtown Mount Kennedy in the hotel. So I arranged for my mum and dad to go down to the show and stay overnight. I called into the reception with a big, big card so that Brendan would see it. And I just said, Brendan, my mum and dad, Harry and Eileen McFadden, will be in the audience tonight. So my mum and dad go down into the audience and Brendan comes down off the stage. Now, he has a very bad leg at that stage or knee. But he makes his way all the way down to the audience, introduces my mother and father, Harry and Eileen McFadden, from the fit-up days. And I made a really special night for them.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I believe my mom and dad will be listening to that. They're 87 and 89.
Oh, I remember that day
well.
That was
very special.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that.
Not at all. It was a delight. And his kindness in sending down the next day. But to do that special act for my mom and dad made their night really special. So that just shows the type of man that he was.
Mm-hmm. Indeed it does. Thank you for that, Thelma. 51551 is our text line and they will take a break.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Brian Warfield of the Wolf Tones, you knew Brendan very well.
Brendan was a great friend over the years. I mean, go back really to the 60s and, you know, when he was with, he had his own band at the time. We'd done a couple of TV shows together. And he was a great character. When, you know, when Brendan came into a room, he took over. And, like, it was like you wouldn't get a word in because he was such a character. He'd have one joke after another. This is even before he, like, he took up his life as a comedian. He was very talented in every respect. And I remember meeting him on numerous occasions, whether it be in America. We played many festivals together in America. And we played around New York a lot. We used to meet in Eamon Durand's. When Brendan would come in, he'd take over the whole room and be telling jokes for a half hour. Honest to God, nobody else could get a word in, but everybody loved him.
Everybody loved him. Brian Warfield, thank you for joining us with that thoughts on Brendan. Melanie, you told us there that one of Brendan's special requests for his funeral in the Liberties was that it be in the Liberties and that this song be played, Dublin in the Rare Old Times.
That's right. It's a song that means a lot to one. Heroes of renown,
the passing tales and glories that once was Dublin town. The hallowed halls and houses and the haunting children's rhymes that once was part of Dublin in the rare old times. Ring a rosy, as the light declines, I remember Dublin city in the rare old times. Oh, me name, it is Sean Dempsey. I'm as Dublin as can be. Born hard and late in Pimlico, in a house that ceased to be. By trade I was a cooper, lost out to redundancy, and like my house that fell to progress, betrayed to memory. And ring a ring a rosy, as the light declines, I remember Dublin City in the rare old times.
Brendan Gray singing Dublin in the rare old times. Melanie, from ourselves, from all of us here on the Liveline team, you did your dad proud today. We want to wish you all the very best wishes and all your family over the next weeks and days.
Katie, thank you so much. And I just want to say, you know, to many people, Dad was a legend in show business, but he'll always be a legend of a father, husband, Gaga, brother, and all the other titles that he wore so proudly like a badge of honour. And I do believe that he's our national treasure. And thank you so much for this opportunity for us to hear these lovely acknowledgements that he deserves.
And there's so many, many more, Melanie. Best wishes.
Thank you.
I remember Dublin City in the rare old times. And this is a little special verse to the memory of some of the great Dublin people like Brendan Behan, Jimmy O'Dea, James Joyce, all the people who made Dublin famous around the place. Fare thee well, my Anna Liffey. Sure I can no longer stay and watch the new glass cages that spring up all along your quay. Be minds too full of memories, too old to learn new chimes. I'm a part of
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.